Now as we begin to read, please, verses 1 to 4, the joy of the apostle. The elder unto the well-beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth. For I rejoice greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth that is in thee, even as thou walkest in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. The joy of the apostle. Verses 5 to 8, the grace of hospitality. The grace of hospitality. Beloved, thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers, which have borne witness of thy love before the church, whom if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, thou shalt do well. Because that for his name's sake they went forth, taking nothing of the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such, that we might be fellow helpers to the truth, the grace of hospitality. Verses 9 to 11, the lording of Diotrephes. The lording of Diotrephes. I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loveth to have the preeminence among them, receiveth us not. Wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words, and not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren, forbiddeth them that would, and casteth them out of the church. Now I want you to read very carefully with me this next verse, for I'll be making a suggestion to responsible men here. Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. The lording of Diotrephes. Verses 12 to 14, the testimony of Demetrius. The testimony of Demetrius. Demetrius hath good report of all men and of the truth itself. Yea, and we also bear record, and ye know that our record is true. I had many things to write, but I will not with ink and pen write unto thee. But I trust I shall shortly see thee, and we shall speak face to face. Peace be to thee. Our friends salute thee. Greet the friends by name. As you know, John wrote 5 books or letters or whatever you like to call them. He wrote his gospel to defend the deity of Christ. He wrote his first epistle to defend the humanity of Christ. He wrote the book of the Revelation to show us the top stone and the end of divine purpose and divine counsel. He wrote his second epistle, amongst many things, to call for saints to defend the person of Christ. And he wrote his third epistle, amongst other things, to indicate the grace of hospitality. Interesting, isn't it? Just the very opposite to what I would have done. If I had been calling for people to defend the person of Christ, I would have written to a man. John wrote to a woman. That's remarkable. For you'll notice in 2 John 9 and 10, he says to this elect lady, whosoever transgresseth and abideth not in the doctrine of Christ hath not God. He that abideth not in the doctrine of Christ, he that abideth in the doctrine hath both the Father and the Son. If therefore there come any unto you, and bring not this doctrine, receive him not into your house, neither bid him God speed. That's remarkable. Women asked to defend the person of Christ. He says, if there be any who transgress, who go beyond, and abide not in the doctrine, that is what is known as the doctrine of development. For instance, if you went into some of these churches around and watched the ritual, and if you waited and had a word with the clergyman and you said to him, now I read my New Testament and I don't see anything about it in all this that's going on, he would say to you, have you never heard of the doctrine of development? Now maybe you haven't, so I'll tell you what it is. The doctrine of development is this, that after the apostles died, and it was felt as the climate changed that there was a necessity to introduce a number of things in order to carry on the service of God. And that has always been the way in Christendom. As the climate changed, so they adopted procedures. As Women Lib has come to the forefront over the years, in the old country now we are getting women elders and women ministers. That's the doctrine of development. And of course, being quite a simple true believer, you would say to him, well, that's strange. I didn't think that the Bible changed or that scriptural principles change. Well, they don't. Even the brethren change. Even assemblies change. But divine truth and scriptural principles never change. And of course, God knew that the day would come that when the man of the house is out working and the woman will be in herself, the wife, that they'll come knocking at your door bringing false doctrine. Receive them not into your house, neither bid them Godspeed, keep them at the door. Interesting, he should write it to a woman. If I had been writing about the grace of hospitality, I'd have written to a sister. John writes to a brother. Now, very quickly please, you'll notice in 2nd and 3rd epistle that he's called the elder. That is, he's the oldest living apostle. He's an old, old man. So he is known affectionately as the elder. John was the last living link with Christ. That's why in his epistle, especially his first epistle, he'll talk about things that were from the beginning, for John could go back to the beginning. And John could accurately tell you the things that were from the beginning. Brethren and sisters, it's a great comfort as one who ministers divine truth to know that God graciously allowed in principle every form of error to come in and to be met in the Holy Scriptures so that we have principle to meet every situation that will arise today. Now, John here has a very real affection for this man called Gaius. There are other three Gaiuses, but never mind them for the moment. You'll notice verse 1 that John says he loves him in the truth. Our brother Alves has been talking to elders and he says, I love you. It's good to see love between brothers, male to male, because we love each other in the realm of truth. That's what brings us together. That's what binds us together. Some of us at times are not too lovable. We don't make it easy for people to like us. But we are bound together in the bonds of truth. Verse 2. Beloved. Now he says, Gaius, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth. Now he says, Gaius, I know that your soul's in good condition. I wish that your body was the same. Do you think that the apostle would write like that to us? For mind you, looking down at most of you, your body looks in good condition. I don't know about your soul. How are you doing inwardly? Is your soul as fat and prosperous as your body? Do you give it the same amount of feeding as you give your body? This man's soul was prospering. Verse 3. I rejoice greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth that is in thee internally, even as thou walkest in the truth externally. Here was a man that believed, that practiced what he believed. Here's a man that lived what he preached. And John draws attention to it.
Verse 4. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Now, he could be speaking as an apostle purely, and all the saints are his children because he's the last apostle. It is very possibly quite definite that he had led Gaius to Christ. And he had a very real joy when he could look at this person that he had led to the Lord and to find him walking in the truth. You can widen it. It's a very real joy to lead someone to Christ, and after the years, to find them still going on with God. It's a very real thing for elders to see the saints walking in the truth. And there is a peculiar and unique joy to parents to see the family going on with God. Now, let's come now, please, to the grace of hospitality. He says, verse 5, thou doest faithfully or loyally whatsoever thou doest to the brethren whom you know and to strangers whom you don't know. He says, these men have borne witness to thy love before the church. That is, there were those who had come, possibly itinerant preachers, and they had paid tribute to the hospitality of Gaius. He was the man of the open heart, the man of the open home, and obviously the man with an open pocket. And he was prepared to receive the servants and to receive the saints. He says, whom if thou bring forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, thou shalt do well. Now, that these are interesting expressions. Now, first of all, I want to ask you, do you open your home to the people of God? One of the many marks of an elder is that he has an open home. You don't need to be invited. You're welcome at any time. He's a lover of hospitality. And so it says here. Now he says, Gaius, they have borne witness to your hospitality. This is one of those places that, where Gaius was, that you associate with names. Isn't that right? You move around the country and someone mentions a place, you think of a particular brother. So it was here. Now notice what he says. He says, if thou bring forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God. What does that mean? Now you get this expression recurring in your New Testament. Now I'll quote and read to you, because I'm coming now to the support of the Lord's servants. He says in Romans 15, whensoever I take my journey into Spain, I will come to you, for I trust to see you on my journey and to be brought on my way thitherward by you. So it meant that when Paul arrived at Rome, he expected to receive that which would enable him to continue his journey into Spain. That is, he would receive all that was necessary to take him on the next part of the journey. He says in 1 Corinthians 16, it may be that I will abide and winter with you, that you may bring me on my journey. He says in 2 Corinthians 1, I will pass by you into Macedonia and come unto you again, and to be brought on my way toward Judea. Have you got it? And you'll remember, won't you please, in Titus chapter 3, that he said this, bring Zenas the lawyer and Apollos on their journey diligently, that nothing be wanting unto them. Now, I'm talking now about a side of things that very few of you know about. I'm talking now about depending on the Lord to meet recurring needs. You know, it's a very real thing. It says here in verse 7 that for the sake of the name, These men went forth taking nothing of the Gentiles. That's an amazing statement. They were out, as they talk about, in the work. How would they be supported? Now I want to ask you a question. How do you think the Lord was supported? Who supported the Lord Jesus and the itinerant band of preachers? According to Luke 8, verses 2 and 3, he was supported by a number of wealthy women who ministered to him of their substance. Should we be any different than our Lord, brethren? We don't want a salary. We don't want a stipend. I remember the day I received the final month's salary. After I received it, I made my way down to the income tax office. Is that what you call it here? Inland Revenue. Then I went, and behind the desk there's a young fellow. So I told him my business. So he listened for a while, and then he said to me, "Never came across this before." He says, "I can understand a Church of Scotland minister that gets a stipend." And he says, "We know of Roman Catholic priests and we know how to deal with them." He says, "I never met any of you boys before." He says, "Now let's get this clear. Are you telling me that you've given up your job and that you're going out to preach and that you're not going to get a salary?" I said, "That's right. That's exactly what I'm saying." Well, he said, "Would you mind telling me how it works? How are you going to live?" But he says, "If you haven't got a job and you're not getting a salary, what are you doing down here at this office?" Well, I said, "I'll tell you how it will likely work. I said, I may go to a certain place." I'm talking now of places in England and money and, you know, in Britain. I said, "I could go down to a certain place, maybe to Southampton or somewhere like that. I could have meetings there in connection with a certain local church, maybe for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or a month." I said, "At the end of the month," I said, "the folks that form this church," I said, "could give me a gift." I said, "There is no compulsion at all." I said, "They don't need to give me a gift if they don't want to." I said, "There is no maximum and there is no minimum. At the end of the month, they could give me £400, some hope, or they could give me £40. I said, "But that's the position." So he looked at me very steadily for about half a minute, and then he leaned over the desk and he said, "Do you think they'll get very much?" Now, he never heard me preach. Now, you can appreciate this, can't you? That outside in Christendom, they just haven't a clue about this. It's not a business-like way to do things. And after all, if you pay them back the piper, you can call the tune. But it's a different story having men going about that are not the servants of the assemblies and not the servants of the brethren, but men who serve God. Listen, brethren, I think I've said it before. This is a lonely place. God knows it's lonely. It's a lonely place. When a man stands up here in God's name and faces an audience, recognizes that there's a day of account coming to Christ, not to a committee of brethren, but to Christ himself, I tell you, it's a lonely business. Many a time I've left a platform and went to the door and wondered how you would greet me after I have told you what God told me. It's a lonely business. Who would live this kind of life? Living out a suitcase, changing your bed every other week. Just before I left, a very, very close relation of mine, as I said goodbye, he looked at me He says, I've said many a time, it's the most unnatural job in the world. How can you do it? Travelling away 6,000 miles to Vancouver when you could be at home here having more meetings than you're fit to take. That's it. For the sake of the name. Can you appreciate that? We're doing it for Christ. We're doing it for Christ. It's the greatest business in the world. Verses 9 to 11. Now we're giving an insight, Diotrephes. Here was a man, notice what's said about him. One, he loveth to have the preeminence. Two, he didn't receive John nor his fellow preachers. Three, he maligned them and slandered them. Verse 10. And fourthly, he excommunicated out of the church the brethren that wouldn't carry out the orders. That's some boy to have in a church, I'm telling you. Eh? Neither lording it over the flock. Here it's here. Who's this man? He's the boss. That's what it is. Now there's a world of difference between a boss and a leader. A boss stands at the back and says, go. A leader stands at the front and says, come. Now, you can judge what you've got, where you are, whether you're elders or bosses or leaders. Now notice, he loveth the first place. He loveth to have the preeminence. Now mark this, brethren. Make no mistake about this. That once you find yourself in an elder who you're in a place of power, you're in a place of authority. And if you're there for God, you can do a world of good. You can handle things before they come public. But mark this, you can do a terrible amount of damage. He loved the first place. It's remarkable in your New Testament, you read about Secundus, that means second. You read about Tertius, that's Latin for third. And you read about Quartus, that is Latin for fourth. You didn't know I was a Latin scholar. But you never read of primus or primate first. For God has decreed that in all things Christ shall have the preeminence. But here was a man that wanted the first place. And he loved it. He loved it. He was proud of it. Brethren, I want to ask you something. Do you love the first place? Now listen. There's a wee bit glamour about being up here. Do you know what a young brother asked me at the on the conference floor after a session? Now please, he's referring to me. It doesn't only refer to me. I don't know whether I should tell you this or not. He says, Mr. Hunter, I want to ask you a question. How do you manage to keep humble when the spotlight's on you and people are clamouring for your ministry, so to speak, and so on? Now, you know what I mean. I'm not blowing my horn. You understand? He says, how do you manage to keep humble? Listen, brethren. There's only one place that can cut you down to size, and that's the sanctuary. And as a servant of God, I have long since learned this, that it's just as vital to go back to the sanctuary after I've delivered my message than it was to be in it before I came. That's right. You learn to go back to the presence of God. That's the thing that will keep you humble. Secondly, He said, he receiveth us not. Now you'll notice that John says, I wrote unto the church. But this boss destroyed the letter, obviously. He didn't read it. He only read what suited him. And he put the bar up against men that he didn't like. Now, we must be on the side of John the Apostle. John says, this man receiveth us not. Now I'll make a suggestion about these things in a moment. Notice too, there was nothing too hard he could say about them. He maligned these men, these servants, these preachers. Do you ever hear them going at the preachers? Now listen now, brethren. We are not paragons. We are not perfect. But you'll always be careful, won't you, what you say about a man of God. But this man, to hold his position, must keep certain men out. And he must try and destroy their character. And, says John, not only does he forbid others not to have us, but if they don't toe the line, they're excommunicated. Tremendous, isn't it? Now, brethren, would you accept this? That in John's third epistle, you've got a tension between apostolic ministry and the permanence of the elderhood. Now watch. What I mean is this. John is the last living link with Christ, and soon apostolic authority personally will be withdrawn when John goes. And Diotrephes is saying, I'm part of the elderhood that's permanent. And in a little while, this fellow will be gone. And we'll be able to do things the way we want to do them. So there was a tension between apostolic authority in John and self-opinionated, determined men that wanted their own way. Brethren, that's what's wrong with us. We're rejecting apostolic authority. We're wanting our own ways. Isn't that what happened with the ship in Acts 27? Isn't that right? It foundered because they rejected apostolic authority in Paul. Oh, brethren, isn't there a great need to get back to the primitive excellence of the Holy Scriptures? Isn't there something refreshing about getting back to the book and to basic principles? And to come to find out the revelation of the truth of God and the truth of a local church in all its beauty and simplicity and pristine excellence as it was given to us from his holy apostles. Now look at verse 11. Now I'm reading it in the context of Diotrephes. Listen to this. Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. Is he telling them, don't follow the example of Diotrephes? That's evil. Watch now. He that doeth good is of God. That's right. He that doeth evil hath not seen God. I suggest to you that John is suggesting that Diotrephes is not converted. Now he says, follow not that which is evil. He that is evil hath not seen God. Brethren, the leading elder in the local church not converted. Now listen carefully. Don't you think, brethren and sisters, all things considered, it's high time that we began in assemblies to recognize this. That a great deal of our troubles today in assemblies is arising not only from carnal Christians, but it's arising from the fact that we have in our assemblies people who are not converted. You read the seven churches. It's perfectly clear that there were people in them who weren't converted. Entrance to the dispensational churches by new birth, you can never be put out of it. To be put out of the whole church, you must reverse the processes of new birth, and that's impossible. But you can find in a local church where you're received in your own testimony people there who are not converted, and that's the root of our trouble. Now I'm not blaming elders, you're only human, like the rest of us. One of the most difficult things in elderhood that I found was dealing with believers' children. They know all the answers. They can put the things in the phrases that you want them to put. And you're not too happy when people don't use the phrases that we like. Oh, you need a lot of discernment, brethren. You need a lot of discernment. Can't you see the need constantly to test the foundations? Now, finally, Demetrius, please. Now he says, Demetrius hath a good report of all men. That's good. Every Christian should. Secondly, he hath a good report of the truth itself. That is, if you had met Demetrius, if you had met him, you would have seen the truth exemplified in the man's life. Brethren, the vital thing is to live the thing you believe. Again, he says, ye and we also bear record, and ye know that our record is true. Now he says, now listen. Demetrius had a good testimony with everybody. And he said, if you met him, you would see it there. But the fact that you don't know him, you accept our testimony, our record is true. He says, I can commend Demetrius. That's good. Brethren, moving over Britain and this country, many and many a time I am asked my opinion of certain servants. I am always happy when I'm free to commend fully. Quickly now, verse 13. I have many things to write, but I will not with ink and pen write unto thee. Do you remember in 2 John, he said something similar, verse 12, having many things to write unto you, I would not write with paper and ink. So he says here, now listen carefully, I had many things to write, I will not with ink and pen write unto thee, but I trust I shall shortly see thee, and we shall speak face to face. That's good. John's a wise man. You know, brethren, I would not accept a letter from a brother in our local assembly. I don't go into correspondence with local brethren. If they want to see me, there's ample opportunity for them to see me. They don't need to write letters. I don't enter into correspondence with local brethren. Never have done. Tell you why. The brethren are experts at reading between the lines. Oh yes. Experts at reading between the lines. If a man wants to see me, I'm glad to meet him. For I can tell by the look in his eyes and the jut of his jaw where he is. And I would far rather look into his eyes and talk to him. Now write. Don't you write letters. It's not the first man I told you the other day that's lost money through it. Don't write letters when you can talk. Again. Notice what he says. Peace be to thee. Well, Gaius would need it if a man like Diotrephes is in the assembly. Peace be to thee. Now watch this. Our friends salute thee. Greet the friends by name. Now that's interesting, isn't it? If that had been Paul, he'd been saying, the brethren salute you. Greet the brethren by name. But John doesn't. John says, the friends salute thee. Greet the friends. Do you remember in Acts 27... when they were going on their journey by boat, that it says this, the next day we touched at Sidon. Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go unto his friends to refresh himself. That's right. Listen, brother. We're friends. We're friends. I want to tell you something. You can check it out if you have any way of checking it out, you'll find it's true. I went to Kilmarnock in 1949, 28 years ago. It's a long time. Over yonder in the assembly that meets in Elam Hall, Kilmarnock, they're all my friends. I greet them by name. I can put out my hand. I have no difficulties with my friends at home. I'm in 100% fellowship with every one of them.
and have no complaints, and have actually this year was invited to speak at their conference for the third time in 5 years, specially requested that I'd be there. I was asked 6 weeks ago if I'd make myself clear on a Saturday night to deal with the subject of marriage and divorce. And since that, I have already addressed the assembly 3 times this year. Brethren, they're my friends. They're my friends. God knows I wouldn't have it any other way. That's it. Have you got it? The joy of the teacher. The grace of hospitality. The warning of lording. The testimony of Demetrius. Brethren and sisters, we're friends. We're friends. Sometimes I have to say things at home. The last address I gave in Kilmarnock was an address calculated to meet needs that were immediately local and in Ayrshire. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. From the platform I have to give advice to the elderhood in relation to certain matters. Brethren, it never damaged the friendship. There's a dignity about the service of God. My preaching, brethren, there's a dignity about this business. You represent God and Christ and the Holy Spirit. So may the Lord bless his word.